Chapter 13. Nighttime in the Ether. The jungle undergrowth rustled at Kairos's passing. There was just enough starlight passing through the treetops that he was able to find his way without stumbling around by ether vision alone. Accustomed though he was to watching in both, he was going to have his fill of seeing ether soon enough, and wanted to enjoy the light a while longer, scant though it was in the pre-dawn hours. His slumber had been restless, first from seeing the aftermath of Iridan and Juliana's post-marital brawl, then more persistently due to his own worries about the thought of what he was about to undertake.
Juliana is fine. Iridan is going to be fine. How will I fare when someone thinks back to me on the morrow?
Kairos had thrown on his old tunic. An odd feeling after becoming so used to baring his chest like the Denku natives. He knew he would be wanting it when he arrived in Acardia, though, so he kept it with him. The northern air would be pleasant enough, but not so much so that he would shun the protection that a good layer of wool would afford. The sea breezes were cut down by jungle trees, but it was not so warm before dawn out of doors. It was better than forgetting about the tunic later. Kairos bent low to place a palm-sized stone on the ground. It was adorned with runes he had carved the previous day and infused with ether. The runes did very little, but they were easy to see in his ether vision. He looked back on the path he had taken, peeking into the ether briefly to align the stone he had just set down with the ones that were already in place. The Denku had little in the way of navigational equipment, but Kairos was fairly certain his line was good enough to get him to Acardia, if not straight to Scar Harbor. The first hints of dawn peaked above the horizon, and Kairos continued to lay his stones. He had a satchel filled with them, and was going to lay them as far as he could, until he ran out of stones or island upon which to place them. It was quiet and peaceful. The earliest risers among the Denku were the fisher folk, and they would not be heading into the jungle.
Will I miss this place? There is the same salt in the air back home, but it smells of fruit and flowers here, not just brine. Winter will come soon, and Denku Appa will scarcely notice the difference, while I stomp through drifts of snow to buy ink for 4 months of the year in Scar Harbor. It will be good to hear Acardian spoke by native tongues again, though, and to have a few spiced crescents, even if I must sneak into Gruder's in disguise. I think, though, that if I can have Abelay with me, I can be happy anywhere.
Kairos placed another stone, smiling to himself. Kairos's satchel was nearly empty by the time Gahalu found him, late in the morning. The weight of the stones had been wearing on Kairos's shoulder, and he was glad to be nearly done with the task. The burden of saying his farewells was not so easily shed, though.
"What are the stones for, spirit man Kairos?" Gahalu asked, suspecting the answer based on the direction he had traveled in following them.
"The spirit world is dark," Kairos explained. "I will be going far and lacking for landmarks. I want to be sure of my course before setting off across the Katamic. The stones will shine in the spirit world, giving me a heading to follow."
"So your time with us is at an end," Gahalu ventured, watching as Kairos placed another of his beacon stones and checked it against the long line he had already placed.
"Yes, today I will make my journey. My short trials on the beach have been getting much better. I can control it well enough now that I think I will be safe, even for so long a distance."
"How soon?" Gahalu asked him.
Kairos felt as if his heart had already departed the island, and he began to miss his friend before he had even left. "We can walk back to the village. I will take a midday meal, say my farewells. Then I will gather what little I will take with me and be on my way," Kairos said. "I do not intend to be away for too long. Days, certainly. Perhaps months. But I expect to return when I am able."
"Once you have found your woman and convinced her to join you here?" Gahalu guessed,
following as Kairos stood and began the walk back to the village, his satchel empty.
"That is my plan.
I have a few others I wish to visit as well, whom I have wondered about in my exile from Scar Harbor. With the manner of my leaving, my reputation must be in shambles, and I do not wish that to be the last impression my friends and family have of me. I will visit my parents and any of my siblings who are still living nearby. I will see my baker friend and my old mentor who now works for the Akkardian King. I will see my old colleagues, perhaps, as well. I dare not linger, though. I was still thought a criminal when I left, and though I could defend myself, I have no wish to cause strife by my return.
You will be missed, Gahalu replied.
The farewell meal was an emotional affair. Kairos had not realized how deeply he had affected the lives of the Dinku. Their previous spirit man had been advisors and wise men, but had never shown them such vivid demonstrations of the power of the spirit world before. The Dinku had grown more devout by Kairos's presence among them, and it pained them to see him go. Many of the womenfolk wept openly. Tipu and Kali could not even stay long enough to make their goodbyes to him personally, running off sobbing from the small feast. Men drank in tribute to him, but Kairos had to refuse to join them. He explained that strong drink would cloud his powers and make his trip dangerous. The hunters did not know how the spirit man's powers worked, but understood well enough the impairments that liquors caused, and accepted his polite refusal. As Kairos stood to make his way to the spot he had plotted for the start of his trip, the Dinku crowded around, hugging him and touching him. They shook his hand in the Akkardian tradition he had shown them. They clapped him on the back and wished him a safe journey. Kairos accepted all the kind words and gestures, but was already beginning to block them out as he cleared his mind in preparation.
This is it, he thought. Time to go home.
Doxlo intuve menep gehalivixiu junimar tequalex ferendak ruzgunmani dekdardan vesvato iho.
And the world of light went dark as Kairos finished the incantation. Sources abounded on the island, but the beacons he had ruined stood out as clearly as the moon in a starry sky. He drifted toward the first of them deliberately, keeping his pace slow so that he did not whiz past and lose his way. From the first stone he headed to the second, and from the second to the third. There was no sense of up or down, left or right in the void he found himself in, as a disembodied source loosed in the ether. He could spin himself around and not feel dizzy, though disorientation would be certain.
Without those stones, I could never have aimed my way to Akkardia.
The stones did not give the sense of a straight line the way they did as he laid them out that morning, confirming to Kairos that they were going to keep him to his heading better than his free-floating senses could have managed. Confident that he was on course, he increased his speed.
This is amazing. I always knew Tellurak was round, but I think I can see it in the slight arc of the stone's path.
Kairos passed by stone after stone until he saw the end of his guiding beacons. Steeling himself, he passed the last of them and kept his heading as steady as he could manage.
Here goes nothing.
Kairos shot through the ether like a cannonball. He passed through the remaining sources on the island in a blur and found himself in a sparse wilderness, as if leaving a dense fog to find himself in a light mist.
The Katamek, he realized. It must be much less densely populated in the deep waters away from the islands.
He knew from his experiments that his sense of time was accelerated while using the transference spell. He had probably just been enclosed in the sphere of ether a moment ago, by the Dinku bystander's reckoning. Kairos held his attention dead ahead, not daring to veer for fear of losing his way. It was dark all about him, with just occasional breaks for a source here and there.
I wish I could see in the light while traveling like this. The view must be singularly compelling, flying over the water as fast as I must be going.
Time passed and Kairos began to worry.
How long have I been gone? It feels like hours, but I have no way to know. I wonder if I can gain altitude to see farther, like a lookout would at sea. I would be much happier with some sight of a congregation of sources.
Kairos moved upward as he went, judging as best he could without a physical sense of his orientation. The gambit paid no reward, though, save to aid the dark, nagging portion of Kairos's brain in its attempt to convince him that he had gone astray. There were no large groups of sources to be seen that would indicate a town, coastal shallows filled with fish, or even forests. Kairos looked all about and immediately knew his mistake. I just lost my heading. He could not keep his body still and just turn his head to look around. His body was back on Denku Appa. He had no sun or other landmark to guide himself by. Turn to the left and then back to the right. He had no way to tell if he had gone back to facing exactly the same direction. Kairos made his best guess, but he knew he was unlikely to find Scar Harbor or any part of Acardia except by sheer chance. Instead of certainty of direction, he settled for speed.
If I cannot find where I wish to go, I ought to at least get somewhere, and fast.
There was no telling how long he would be able to sustain the amounts of ether he was spending. He would find the first settlement he came across and reorient himself from there. With a ferocious speed, Kairos tore across the ether. There was naught around him but darkness and the ambient ether, long since departed from any source. He was finding nothing. At the speed he imagined he was going, he ought to have crossed half the world.
What if?
The possibilities were beginning to stand and call the roll. What if he had gone up too far and was above the clouds? What if he was below ground, having mixed directions of up and down? What if some outside force was blocking his ether vision and there were sources all about? What if Tipu and Kali had moved his beacon stones so he would get lost and have to return to Denku Appa? Worries were pushed aside.
Whatever went wrong, I need to get somewhere soon.
The signs of fatigue were beginning to present themselves. He was feeling slower. His source was beginning to ache just a bit. Kairos renewed his efforts to draw in ether and pressed onward. Back on Denku Appa, the mood of Kairos's well-wishers shifted. The mixture of sadness and solemnity that had marked their spirit man's departure was replaced by terror. They had cautiously withdrawn a ways from Kairos's sphere of ether, but many stayed to watch the strange magic whisk away their friend. It had seemed harmless enough at first, but then the magic began to claw at them. Few Denku had ever felt the touch of magic before Kairos's arrival, and the friendly little magics he had used on them for their entertainment had been gentle and unthreatening. But the magic sphere that encased Kairos and obscured their view of him was trying to draw the spirit right out of them, greedily attempting to devour their essences. Men and women alike screamed and ran. A brave few, including Toktu and Gahalu, withdrew beyond the sphere's effects and then turned back to watch. The jungle undergrowth and even the trees leaned toward that sphere as if a gale wind blew in its direction. The greenery nearest to it browned and blackened, dying right before their eyes.
Stay calm. The book said I could try navigating by feel as well. Home should feel familiar. I need to find a familiar feeling somewhere out in that void and follow it back. Whether that takes me to Acardia or back to my own body, I can make do.
Kairos came to a stop and paused. He was still drawing gluttonous amounts of ether, but it would avail him nothing if he could not find a destination before running out of ether or burning himself out due to exhaustion. There were no distractions except those in his own mind, and he fought those down. He felt silly, wasting his time hoping that some path would open itself before him, when he could be getting anywhere with some haste, if only he moved. At length, a length he had no way to judge other than by guessing at his level of fatigue, he felt something. Whether it was intuition or delusion, he thought he felt something. It was the best he had to go on. He focused his attention on that feeling and gave every bit of his mental effort over to heading in that direction. The feeling had been so faint at first as to have been easily mistaken for a panicked mind turning optimism into false hope. But as he went, Kairos felt more certain of his course. He drew harder and harder upon the ether, feeling that he was running out of time before he exceeded his own limits. His mind began to scream for him to stop. In the distance, Kairos saw sources. He could discern little due to the fantastic rate at which he approached, but he could at least tell that it was a cluster of sources, and he could feel himself in there among them.
Back to Denku Appa, it seems, Kairos thought ruefully.
Having no momentum as a disembodied source, he parked himself at the sourceless Kairos he found there, going from hurtling at incomprehensible speeds to a full stop, quicker than the blink of an eye. The sooner he returned to the world of light, the better. Kairos's eyes snapped into reality, accompanied by a sensation of falling. The sand beneath his feet gave way. He had just enough time for a brief, startled yelp before hitting the ground, slamming down onto his back on the fortuitously soft sand he had brought along with him.
Huh?
Kairos looked up and saw neither sun nor stars, nor any bit of Denku Appa he had recognized. He was in a softly lit room of green and black stone, looking up through a transference spell-sized hole in the room above it. He checked himself for injuries, giving the world an unobserved moment to discreetly sort itself out and start making sense. He had landed awkwardly, twisting a knee and wrist in the fall, but nothing at all serious. His ward must have been drained in transit. He patted his head, feeling for lumps and checking his fingers to see if they came away bloody, but his body seemed largely intact. Kairos's mind was about done, though. It had clearly had enough. Kairos lost consciousness.
Welcome to Kadrus, a strange but familiar voice above him roused Kairos from his slumber.
I have warded us in. You are safe here for now so we can talk.
What? Where?
Kairos tried to formulate questions as his eyes fought to focus. A few blinks brought Roshan Solaran's face into view, hovering over him.
First, two rules. You will have to go by Brannis for however long you are here, and you will have to speak Kadrin. I cannot have you wandering about speaking Akkadian, Roshan informed Kairos.
Daring to turn his attention back to his surroundings, Kairos pushed himself up onto his elbows and looked around the room. The accommodations were entirely familiar to him, though he suspected that those in the room from which he had fallen would have been even more so. The spell had taken out parts of four rooms, the one he had actually centered the transference spell on, along with a chunk of the adjoining room as well as the two rooms below those.
How did I get here?
Kairos asked in Kadrin, the familiar sounds tripping up his novice tongue.
That was awful. Practice losing the accent before you give yourself away. Try whispering if you must talk to anyone else in the meantime. It will make the accent less obvious. As for an answer to your question, the transference spell that Brannis has been practicing at night, combined with reckless idiocy, the luck of fate's own children, and a source and draw that would shame a dragon, Roshan commented. For all it is worth, I am rather astonished myself. I had not thought it possible to breach the veil of worlds like that.
The demon looked Kairos over appraisingly.
This is really Kadrus? Kairos asked.
Oh, you had best not be a simpleton. We started with that. Yes, you are in Kadrus, in the Kadrin Empire, in the world of Vaedrus. Brannis is one of the smartest lads I have ever met, and I'm going to be needing you to be just as clever. You certainly did not manage to come all this way on muscle power.
Roshan took hold of Kairos's scrawny arm in one hand, then let it flop back down to make his point.
How far did I travel?
Kairos asked, managing an original question.
Measured how? In miles, leagues, fathoms, yards, cubits, furlongs? I have not the slightest notion. I doubt very much that any such terms even apply. I have no concept of how far Tellurak is from here, or which direction it would be.
Roshan said, appearing flustered in a way that Kairos could not recall Brannis ever seeing him.
I found my way here by feel. Give me the night to recover and I will set things right tomorrow, Kairos promised, feeling distinctly in the wrong. I am trespassing in the Imperial Palace, which I have also damaged. I have also essentially kidnapped their Grand Marshal.
No, I shall have none of that. Count yourself lucky to be alive. Until a more thoughtful, rational means of controlling this power of yours presents itself, you will be staying here and taking Brannis' place, Roshan said.
But I am not Brannis. I look nothing like him, Kairos protested.
Nonsense. You're as good as a twin brother to him if we make allowances for your obviously less vigorous lifestyle. You will take to bed, exhausted after an ordeal of an experiment you conducted, through which you finally unlocked your source's true potential. It has sapped your strength and vitality, but you have finally achieved what Gravis Archon predicted at your birth, Roshan said, apparently thinking through his plan aloud.
It seems a bit premature, I think. I doubt anyone would call his prediction true, just based on having a usable source now.
He predicted Brannis would be some great sorcerer of his age, Kairos said. As much as I hate having to make Gravis Archon look prescient, everyone will think it is true, Roshan told him. Do you really have no concept of how strong a source you have?
The one person who commented on it mentioned that it was stronger than average, Kairos offered.
During his time with Denric Zane, the pirate captain had looked at him using ether vision and said as much. Well, someone either has a gift for understatement or is nearly blind in the ether. They said that the ancient sorcerer Talix had a source that shone with the fury of the desert sun, that it hurt just to look upon him in the ether. As we've been talking, I've been looking at you only in the light, something I hardly ever do, because I was getting a headache looking at your source, Roshan said. Kairos said nothing. He did not know a proper response.
Oh, but I did notice something before you awakened. The warlock poked Kairos in the shoulder, where the tattooed ward was inscribed. It clearly identifies you as a fortified wall, though I suspect that there is some taxonomic error at work here. In any event, Brannis does not have a tattoo, and neither should you. It has been strengthening itself off your source since you got here. Draw the ether back off it, and I will remove the ink.
I've been meaning to ask someone about that. Is it harmful to have wards placed directly onto the skin like that? I was told it was ill-advised, but I seem none the worse for it, and it has been very useful.
Kairos hoped to finally get a definitive answer to that nagging question. Yesterday I would have said so. It would be like covering your flesh in ticks or leeches. Seeing it on you, though, it is like a tick on a monohorn. I doubt you would notice it, though in some small way you will be better off without it. Once I remove it, I will want you to shave as soon as possible. I will keep folk away from you until you have acclimated a bit, but you need to be Brannis. Brannis was clean-shaven as of last night.
Do I really look that much like him otherwise?
Kairos was dubious.
Of course you do. It just works that way.
Now I have many other matters to attend to, and I will have thoughts of what to do with you distracting me throughout all of them. If I do not see to them, rumors will escape reasonable control and may start a panic. Among other matters, I am sure many residents of Cadrus thought we came under Magrin attack. Your spell shook the city. Roshan took a surprised Kairos under the arms and lifted him up into the room above.
One last question, then, before you remove this ward. You know about both worlds. Does that mean you have a counterpart in Tellurak as well? Kairos asked.
Brannis, Roshan emphasized the name. I am 240 summers old. If I ever had a counterpart like you, who from your world has ever lived remotely so long?